5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step 3, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step 4, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, I'm excited to bring you this special interview. Some of you, if you've known me for very long, you know I'm a huge Everclear fan. And Tracy and I just recently got to go to an Everclear concert with a meet and greet package. I got my guitar signed by Art Alexakis, the lead singer from Everclear, and the rest of the band. But we kind of talked a little bit, and he likes the idea that we start off the podcast with something positive. Every show we talk about mental health, and he has a hell of a backstory, which I already knew, but most people, if you don't know the band or you're unfamiliar with them at all, you wouldn't know his backstory. But it's an incredible triumphant story from somebody who went through a lot of living in bad neighborhoods, poverty, a broken home, drugs, drinking. The man was selling drugs at 12 years old. His brother, which was his only male role model after his father left him at an early age, overdosed and died at 21 years old after getting shot the year before that. So it was a very tough upbringing. So drugs and alcohol weighed heavily. He was eventually able to kick that in his late 20s and before he actually started Everclear, and he's been clean and sober for the last 30-some years. And now he's battling MS for the last 3 years, but he's still out there touring, being a rock star. I thought it would be awesome for you guys and very inspirational if you could hear his story from the man himself. And he agreed to come on and do that, and I couldn't be more happy. So if you're unfamiliar with the band, the next 3 minutes or so are going to be just some clips of some of their more popular songs. Some of them will probably be like, oh, I remember that song, or I didn't realize that was them. But at least to give you a little bit of the artist themselves before you hear the story, I thought it would be the perfect lead-in. So thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this. There is no paranormal in this at all. It's strictly just for hopefully inspirational purposes to show you what you can overcome in life if you really want to.
I am still living with your ghost. West Coast. I don't want to be your downtown. I don't want to be your stupid game with my big black boots and an old suitcase. Father of mine, tell me, where have you been? You know, I just closed my eyes, my whole world disappeared. Father of mine, take me back to the day. Yeah, when I was still your golden boy, back before you went away. I remember blue skies walking the block. I loved it when you held me high. I loved to hear you talk. You would take me to the... that I owe you. Yes, you can pay the bills. I will give you more when I get paid again. I hate those people who love to tell you money is the root of all the kills. They have never been poor. They have never had the joy of a welfare Christmas.
Hey guys, I have been fortunate to do a ton of interviews in the last 6 years for this podcast, but I can tell you without a doubt, I have never been as excited as I am to be able to do this one, because I am joined by one of my musical idols, Mr. Art Alexakis, the guitarist, founder, and lead singer for the band Everclear. Art, thank you for coming on.
My pleasure. Thank you, brother. Thanks for having me. It was great seeing you the other day. Thanks for making this happen. This is cool.
Well, I've been trying to make this happen for a little bit. You know, when it comes to people like yourself, you're out on the road. You've got this big tour going on right now, celebrating the 30th anniversary of Everclear. And I know you're getting ready to wrap it up. I think you said you got like five more shows left for you to be able to take a little bit of a break. And then you're going over to Europe, from what I understand.
Well, yeah, I mean, we go home next Sunday, our last show is Saturday, on the bus tour. So we fly home, but then we fly back to New York 3 days later, and we've got shows every weekend, at least two to three shows every weekend till October. And then we got a West Coast run that we're going to do in October. And then we got the UK tour, like you're talking about, in November. And then we got Australia in late January, February. So
no rest for the wicked.
No rest for the wicked, brother.
So Art, Everclear is one of my favorite all-time bands. And we're going to talk a little bit about the band, because obviously we can't have you on without talking about the band and some stuff that you got going on right now. But the main reason that I brought you on is because I find your life story as very inspirational. We try to bring motivation to our listeners as much as we can. And that's the main reason that I'm bringing you on. And it just helps that you're actually one of my musical idols. But I think your story is fascinating. So let's cover some real things. I'm going to babble a little bit just to kind of save some time so I can have you talk about the more important things. Everclear is a band. 30-year anniversary. You guys have sold over 6 million albums worldwide. You've been on Spotify. Like, I was looking at Santa Monica, which is, I would say, is probably your most popular song. 145 million streams on Spotify alone. You've had hits, like I said, at Santa Monica, I Will Buy You a New Life, Wonderful, Father of Mine, of course, which I would think you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody who doesn't know that song. You guys have been featured on soundtracks. The movie Loser with Jason Biggs, you were actually the band was in the movie as well as being in the soundtrack. You did the theme song, or I should say title song, to Rockstar with Jennifer Aniston and Mark Wahlberg. And my favorite, which was The Swing, was featured on the Scream 2 soundtrack. That's a very successful career.
It is. And we were on a soundtrack for Romeo and Juliet as well. That was actually our biggest selling soundtrack back in the day. But yeah, no, man, I've had a pretty career, dude. I've been very blessed. I'm in a really good place mentally, as we were talking before, and spiritual-wise, not religious, very spiritual, very, very just positivity. I like that you start off your podcast with positivity every day. I think that's just wonderful. I mean, it's something I'm very grateful for. I've been with my wife for 18 years, and I had almost given up on relationships at that point. And she brought just love and light and positivity into my life and helped me to really understand that was inside of me, when a lot of times I didn't know if it was, you know, the low self-esteem thing. And just the last 18 years have been just wonderful for me. Even with, you were talking about it earlier, I got diagnosed with MS, and you know, and certain bad things happen, but for the most part, man, my karma's really good, and I'm just grateful for it. So thank you for having me on. That's cool.
I want to say a couple of things to you, and then I'll quit babbling, because people hear me all the time on here, and we'll get to your story. But I mentioned to you off the air that I have 3 musical songwriting idols. Those people are John Lennon, Ed Kowalczyk from Live, and you. And the reason is all 3 of those people, all 3 of you, I should say, since I'm talking to you, have a way of songwriting that just grabs me emotionally that nobody else has. And where you come into this is you and your songs. We'll take Father of Mine. I grew up with a father, but when you sing that song, it's so full of raw emotion that it makes me feel like that, damn, I know what it's like to grow up without a father. And I grew up with a father. That's how well you put that out there. And I don't think a song has ever been done that really just is the big F you to my dad for leaving. That's what that song is. And it's just expertly done. And if I remember correctly, there was a group that actually used that song as like their, you know, the music for their organization. It was like a charity or something that was about deadbeat dads or something. But if I remember correctly, for that, it was a group that used that song because it was so powerful and the message.
Well, yeah, it was an organization that was working to enact a bill that was actually in Congress. And I went and spoke at a subcommittee for that, because, and they asked me for that song because of that song. And yeah, it opened a lot of doors for me. But to be honest with you, brother, it's not an F you to my dad. It's not an F you to my dad. It's just, that's what happened. Is, I don't know if you have kids, but people that have kids, a lot of times will watch their kids sleep. I mean, it sounds really boring to people who don't have children, but it's kind of magical because they're just so at peace. They're so innocent looking. It's so pure. It's just purity. And I remember watching my five-year-old, my oldest daughter, sleep and just going, how the hell does a person walk away? How do you walk away from that? How do you walk away from that kind of purity and not want that in your life and that to inspire you to be a better person? How do you do that? Why would you do that? And I went to my room. I have a bedroom that was my office, and I just stayed up all night writing, just journaling about it. Started looking like lyrics, and just had a guitar, just had this riff I had been playing with and this melody. And by the time I went to bed about 6 a.m, I had a song. And I remember playing it for somebody, playing it for my A&R guy in LA. I was down there on business and I stopped in, and I had a deal with Capitol that was part of my contract that I don't do demos. I don't have to submit anything. I'm going to give you an album and that's it. But I also had the agreement with them that I will keep writing and recording songs till you tell me you got singles that'll sell the record, right? Because otherwise you're just being stupid. But I don't write songs for singles. I'm not going to sit down and try to write a hit song. But so he's there and he's like, well, you got anything you can play me or anything you want to tell me about? And I go, he had a guitar in his office. I go, I'll play you the song I wrote like about a week ago called Father of Mine. And I played it for him. And he's this British guy, middle-aged British guy, really stoic, doesn't show a lot of emotion. And you could see he was crying behind his glass. He's like wiping his face. And then we hear the sound out in the anteway, in the front area where the secretaries are, right? And the assistants. And we walk out there, and there's three women, young women, sitting on the desk outside the door, bawling. I mean, like, sobbing. Just, that's the best song I've ever heard. Just, like, losing it. And I'm like, and I look at my A&R guy, and he's like, I don't know if it's a single, but it's definitely going on the album. And I'm like, yeah, I think so. And I didn't know if it was going to hit as a single, because there was nothing like that being played on alternative radio at the time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Those kind of lyrics, those kind of storytelling lyrics. But you know, the history of it was very successful.
Well, like I said, your music, the things that I really like is they just take different viewpoints. Like you take the song Wonderful. That's from the viewpoint of a child that's going caught in the middle, basically, of their parents' divorce. And when that song came out, I was actually just starting a divorce and had three kids at the time. They were all younger. I think the youngest was 12. And I mean, the oldest was 12, and then, you know, the other two were younger than that. And you know, that song really hit me because it just made me think about things from their viewpoint rather than my viewpoint at a very emotional time in my life. And even to jump ahead, you know, when I looked at I Will Buy You a New Life, you know, the lyric that says, I hate those people that love to tell you that money, you know, basically is evil when it kills everything. They have never been poor. They have never had the joy of a welfare Christmas. I grew up not as poor as some kids, but I've had those welfare Christmases, and nobody was singing about that. You know, I always used to talk about, to give you a good comparison, the Cosby Show was huge, but that didn't resonate with me because I didn't have rich parents and grew up in this beautiful house. But when Roseanne came out and the Connors, that was my family. Smart Aleck remarks, and the old crappy furniture with the, you know, the knitted throws over top of them and the smart ass remarks from the parents. That's how I grew up. And so when you sing about stuff like that, that's the songs that just grabbed me, because it felt like you were just you. I had lived some of what you had lived, and it just all resonated with me.
You know, I mean, growing up when I did, and I'm a little bit older, you know, like TV in the early 70s was a lot grittier, like Good Times and Chico and the Man and stuff like that, which showed people living in projects, which I was living in a project, right? I had more to relate with that than I did the Brady Bunch. The Brady Bunch was on at the time, and my life looked nothing like the Brady Bunch at all. You know, whose did? And it was just like, you know, I connect with that. And, you know, that's, I just wanted to, when I wrote Wonderful, I was going through a divorce and watching my daughter, the pain in her eyes and the pain. And we tried to do it as best as we could. It wasn't, you know, I didn't argue with her. I didn't battle her in court. I just gave her what she wanted. I gave her more than what she wanted. Because I had the wherewithal at the time financially to do that, because I wanted to protect my daughter from that. The only thing I insisted on was co-custody, 100% down the line, co-time with her, 50-50. And I was willing to pay for that, because it was going to be better for my daughter. And I'm glad I did that, you know. But not everybody has the wherewithal, the ability to do that, you know. I was very blessed at that time. But even with that, like my dad, my mom left him because he was verbally, emotionally abusive. And at the end, he became physically abusive as well. And she had the balls and the guts to say, screw this, man. I'm done with this. I'm done with being your punching bag emotionally and physically. We're done. I'm taking care of my kids. And in the late 60s, that was a brave thing to do for a woman. It was hard being divorced woman back then. You know, everybody made judgments about you. It was just rough. And my dad split to the other, you know, instead of moving down the street and raising his kids like he should have done, he moved to the other side of the country and moved to a state specifically that wouldn't extradite for child support, right? And Florida. And met another woman and raised her kids, you know? And so it was, you know, when I write songs, I want to put part of my story in there, but the parts that I think are universal themes for a lot of people, that even if, like you said earlier, even if that wasn't your experience, you can connect with that and understand the emotions behind it and relate to it. Because I think that's what good storytelling is. And I grew up listening to and learning from great storytellers.
So let's go to the time your dad and mom split up. This obviously is a rough time financially for your mother, trying to raise kids single. Like you said, you couldn't get any child support from your dad. He was in a place where you couldn't extradite it. What did that do for your family? Where did you guys end up? I know you ended up in the projects and stuff, but tell me a little bit about you growing up and the effects it had on you from drinking and drugs, which would come soon after.
Well, first of all, you know, I remember my mom giving me a sip of beer when I was like 4. And I remember it tasting like candy. Alcohol has always tasted like candy. Drugs and alcohol has always made me feel comfortable in my own skin. It's the only time I've come close to it. And, but you know, you don't just stop at one drink. You know, that I don't understand that one drink situation. Let's stop for a drink. Even let's stop for some drinks, you know,
right.
And buy a bottle as we walk out. That's what you're talking about, right? That's me. I'm an addict. I am an alcoholic. It's genetic in me. But that being said, watching, you know, growing up in the projects, my brother was 9 years older than me. He was in and out of juvenile hall for drugs and dealing drugs, using guns. You know, my brother was a gangster, man. And he died at 21 from an overdose. And his stomach was all wired up with wire from getting shot in the stomach the year before, after he shot two guys. You know, that's my life. That was my male role model growing up. Woo! Yeah.
I read somewhere that
WT runs strong in my family, dude.
I read somewhere that you were selling drugs at the age of 12. Is that true?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I got really good at it in high school. But, yeah, I was selling joints and black mollies and stuff like that. You know, even younger than that. I mean, took acid when I was 11 or 12. And first shot up speed when I was 13. But I didn't do that. I did that sporadically whenever I met, you know, got with people who did that. But by the time I was 16, 17, yeah, I was shooting up coke and heroin whenever I could get it, smoking a lot of hash and taking pills. Yeah. And drinking, always drinking. I had a guy, this guy had a store that he would sell it to underage kids. And I got a system up where I would be the guy he trusted, and he wouldn't sell it to anybody else. So he would sell it to me, and then I would go to them and say, throw me an extra buck and I'll go buy you a bottle, right? Or some pills or some pot or something like that. And that's where the whole drug dealing, by the time I'm in high school, I'm like across the street from my school, at this restaurant, and I was making money for a kid in the 70s. I was probably making $50 a day, which was minimum wage was at the time $3.30 an hour. So, you know, people were working, supporting families on what, say, 350 times, you know, $30 a day. I'm making $50 a day. just not doing anything with it. You're doing nothing good. But the point is, you know, and what you're bringing up is that I'm very grateful that I was given the ability to talk about those things in storytelling. Because a lot of people live a lot of like different types of lives, but they don't have the ability to communicate it in a way that it connects with other people. And I've always had that ability.
Now, obviously, the inspirational part of all this is that you've been able to overcome the past, as horrible as it was. The conditions were not ideal in any way, shape, or form. You didn't have a father to help guide you through these things, but you eventually became a father. You became clean and sober over, what, like 32 years ago, if I'm remembering correctly, somewhere in there. But tell me a little bit about the point where you became clean and sober. What was the turning point there?
I got it. So I've got another call coming in for a conference call. Hold on a second. Okay. We got another few minutes. When I got clean and sober, ask that question again. I'm sorry.
What was the turning point in your life that made you determine that now's the time that I get clean and sober?
Well, I got off drugs because I was having like panic attacks and acid flashbacks and stuff like that. But I kept drinking for another 5 years, even though I was in going to meetings and going through therapy. And, you know, they didn't have rehab like they have it now. Maybe for rich people like Betty Ford Clinic or something, but not for me, you know. But I just got to a point that I was a blackout drunk that was... Why did that go away? Hold on. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Oh, weird. I was a blackout drunk and just, I woke up in my bed with another woman. And my wife was, after being just blacked out and gone for 3 to 4 days, the last thing I remember is going to, getting off work, going into a bar after work on a Thursday. And this is Sunday morning, and I woke up, and this horrible scene was playing out. My wife was, first wife was sitting on the floor crying. I've got a hooker in my bed at my house in her bed. And I just, I put the girl in a car, you know, a cab. I just, my wife, I was going to get better. And I went down to this guy who I had met who had, at a record store that had told me that he thought I was an alcoholic. I didn't even know him. And I was like, fuck you, man. You don't know me. And I went down and said, I think you're right. I need to go to a meeting. And he's like, well, I get off work. Cool. I get off work at 5. I go, no, you said you'd take me to a meeting. I need to go to a meeting now. Right now. And he's like, okay, told the girl, I'm gonna be gone all day. The guy was what in the sober rooms, he was what I call my Eskimo. He found me out in the middle of nowhere and took me and saved me. He saved me. And he took me to 3 meetings and then handed me off to someone else because he had to get home to his family. And never saw the guy again. But I went to 2 more meetings that night. And the next morning, I went home, slept on the couch, woke up the next morning. My hands were shaking, and my vision was blurry. And I went to the hospital, and they treated me for detox for a day. And then I started going to like 5 meetings a day. One before work, and this is before Zoom. Now you can do like right. I did one before work. I'd get up at 5 o'clock, go do a meeting, and then I'd do a meeting at lunchtime. Then I'd do a meeting after work. I'd do one probably before I went to bed. Like there was one in the neighborhood, and I just realized that there was other people like me from all walks of life that were addicts and alcoholics as well. And, you know, I think drinking's fine if you can do it in moderation. If you can just have a couple beers here and there or a couple cocktails, I can't. Not me. And at least I feel very grateful spiritually that those bad things happened to me. And I even feel grateful for my MS. Because it makes me try harder. I have to work harder. You were asking me about touring earlier. And man, it's like, you know, I'm 60. Sometimes I feel like I'm 75. You know, but I got to get up and do it. So we got to wrap it up, man. I got to get on another call.
But, I appreciate it, brother.
If you want to do a part 2 sometime, hit up our publicist and we'll do it. But I love talking to you, man. Okay.
All right, brother. Thank you so much. And congratulations on the re-release of The World of Noise, which was your first album. It's available now on digital. Everybody go listen to it. Thank you, Art. I appreciate it, brother.
Thank you, brother. Do well, Jeff. Yeah!
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take 5 before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.